Even though we got the day and the time wrong, Midisgrass was only too professional, and she won Miss Congeniality for the decade and said, well, you know, I can go ahead and go now. We can talk now. And so we had our first interview in somewhere in early spring 2017. And several other interviews after that. And that's when we learned about the book that was coming out. And we've been talking about it ever since, the Marion option, which many of you have. And if you don't have one, while you're going to the Founders Trading Post today at mikechurch.com/shop to get a copy of the Anti-Mary, then pick yourself a copy up of the Marion option. Okay, and it's on the front page of the store, mikechurch.com/shop. And if you have children, I told somebody the other day, as a matter of fact, I just had use for this. Someone was asking just the other day, does anyone know of a children's book for Marian consecration? I went, as a matter of fact, I do. And the guy was shocked. I said, no, we actually have one. We have it in our store. So we have been talking with Miss Gress for almost 2 years, running solid now. And our, I might have left a year out. Maybe it's 3 years. Maybe it was 2016. She is one of the finest writers that there is out there. She certainly is a Marian, has a devotion to Our Lady without equal. And she has a new book out, and it is called, I just read you from the title, The Anti-Mary Exposed. So say hello to the one and only, my friend and yours, Midis Carrie Gress.
Good morning. That was quite an introduction. My goodness. I think it is actually 2016.
I think it was 2016.
We've been talking. Yeah, because that's when the Marian option came out. So
you obviously have forgiven us for our two slights. And
you know, I actually forgot about that. I remember the first one, but I forgot the second and third instances. So anyway, no, that was pretty funny. And not only have I obviously forgiven and forgotten, I've got my paper and my pen ready because I always learn so much from you. So I just know to have them out and not scramble for them, you know, in the midst of the interview. So I'm ready to chat with you.
Please. I will share something with you that I had never heard, but I bet you have. It's probably in the Marian Marian option. I don't remember it. I just learned this the other day from my new dear friend, Richard Payne. I don't know if you know the Paynes, but they make movies for EWTN, and their latest movie is Wolf in Sheep's Clothing.
And oh, right. I've heard great things about that.
It's fantastic. Your husband will love it. He needs Mr. Gress needs to watch this.
All right.
Now you got to get the extended version, which you can only get on DVD. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mr. Richard was telling this story, and I can't remember how it came up just the other day when I had the chance to actually meet him, and he started talking about this Marian apparition. I said, "Wait! You're telling me that the first apparition was a bilocation, and that Our Lady left Ephesus and went to, I believe it's Cordoza, Spain?" And he went, "Yeah, who doesn't know that?" I went, me." And it's Our Lady of the Pillar.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I didn't know the name of it.
Okay.
Is that the one where she's telling James?
Yes.
She's about ready to die, or
yes,
she's going to heaven. I guess she's not dying, but yeah.
Well, she tells Saint James is struggling with establishing the church in Spain, and he's in dire straits, and she knows this, and she's in Ephesus, so she appears to him on the banks of the Eboa River. I probably just blew that. I only read the story once, and I read it just the other day, and she appeared and said, "I want you to build me a chapel right here, on this spot, right here." And where the apparition appeared, she was standing in front of a tree. When she disappeared after giving the order, she was still there carved into the tree. And so they left it there, and then it got moved a couple times, Our Lady of the Pillar.
Nice. Nice. It, no, I didn't know all the details of it.
It's never been dusted in 2,000 years. They still have, and they say, we have, this thing has, a feather has never touched the surface of this thing.
Oh, my goodness. Imagine what it looks like.
No, it's a small. It's not a life size.
It's not a real pillar. Okay.
No, it's maybe it is. I don't know. It's hard to find pictures. Anyways, I thought I'd share that one with you.
No, I love hearing all these. It's great.
I started reading the book, and I just want to share with the audience from the introduction. I had never heard this. So you set the ground here early. So there was this meeting of the founding anti-mothers of what I call Gal-Qaeda. Mm. And they had this meeting in New York City. New York City! Mm. Yep, New York City. And there was 12 of them, and they started, and this is the conversation that you detailed. Let's start here.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here today? Chairwoman asked. To make revolution, they answered. What kind of revolution? She replied. The cultural revolution, they chanted. And how do we make cultural revolution, she demanded. By destroying the American family, they answered. And how do we destroy the American family? She came back. By destroying the American patriarch, they cried. And how do we destroy the American patriarch, she probed. By taking away his power. Well, how do we do that? By destroying monogamy. How do we destroy monogamy? By promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, abortion, and homosexuality, they resounded. That's amazing now, because the feminist revolution and all of the sexual revolution, we always just assume that it's the patriarchal horn dog society that invented all this. Well, according to this, it's not.
A litany of sorts that I was, it was told, it was Kate Millett, who is the author of Sexual Politics. She was featured on Time and New York Times, everywhere. She was sort of called the Marx of feminism. And she was absolutely a Marxist. And her sister Mallory, Kate passed away a couple of years ago, and her sister Mallory is now a devout Catholic and has been sharing, you know, the real stories behind all of this. And Mallory was there for most of it. She was, her sister and a supporter of all of this, and then eventually realized, you know, this is a dead end and this is awful and everyone was miserable and she had to, you know, find the true faith. But so in the meantime, she's telling all these stories of it. And it was 12 women in Mallory's apartment in New York City. And this is what their goals were. I mean, there's so many more details to it. Mallory's got just a ton of information, and I have some of it sourced and talk about more of it in the book. But it was definitely an architectural pattern that they already had in mind, that they started started feminism with, and they just kind of bulldozed through. So anyway, it's really chilling when you realize just how orchestrated it all was, and even a connection with Marxism, how that's just led through everything.
I think what may be shocking to some people is the boldness of the project. They didn't. Yeah, it wasn't right. Just saying we want to not have to fry eggs in the morning anymore. It wasn't just a little liberation. This was an undoing of civilization.
No, absolutely, and absolutely bold, and yet they achieved all of those things. I mean, we are now living with all of those things as realities in our world. So it's pretty horrifying when you see, you know, the seeds of it and what they were able to achieve.
Now, in erasing or in accomplishing these goals and getting rid of monogamy and the family and promoting all the things that they promoted, because of the very unique and very, as I pointed out, started with Our Lady at the Pillar, or Our Lady of the Pillar, and going all the way through Fatima and Akita and all the other apparitions, the Mother of God, the Mother of the Redeemer, always appears at the most important and opportune times to counsel and to give advice and to lead. And when she when she makes these appearances, what's amazing if you follow this and you cover this brilliantly in the Marian option, is this is always motherly advice.
Mm-hmm.
It's always motherly advice. So is this why we have the title the anti-Mary? Because this is unmotherly advice.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely part of it. But I think what the book really lays out is that we live in a special era where it's unlike any other era, where women are attacked. And women are really the soil of a culture. And so Satan knows he gets the women. He gets everybody, because if the soil's corrupted, you know, any gardener or farmer can tell you this, then you're not going to be able to grow anything. So that's the real goal here, is to get women, and particularly to get women to turn against their husbands and also to turn against their children. And this is really where we see abortion playing such a huge role in all of this, that feminism has gotten us to believe that our children are actually our enemies.
And not only are they your enemies, immediately before or soon after they're born, they can also be the unwilling and unwitting participants in new Aztec Empire human sacrifices.
Yeah, right. And the whole point, and I go through actually a lot of paganism and neo-paganism and show how it's really infected the culture, but you know, even just looking at history, I mean, paganism is always, it's like the weed, it's always, you know, or the jungle, it's always going to keep encroaching unless we actually have real structures and healthy structures to help push it back. And that's what we don't have anymore. And so that's why it's encroaching the way that it always has. And yet, I think the bigger problem, too, is that, you know, this has been incredibly difficult on men. Men, I feel like, and I talk about this in the book, you know, good men don't know what to do because they don't want to push back. They want to support their daughters. They want to support their wives. And frankly, women aren't meant to be their enemy. That's not who they're meant to be fighting against or feel, you know, the sense of I have to fight this. Even Adam didn't want to correct Eve, and that was before the fall. So after the fall, you can imagine how much more men don't want to fight with women and say, you know, rock the boat. And so we're seeing it. Good men don't really know what to do, how to attack this issue. And bad men are really benefiting from it tremendously for their evil deeds. And so, of course, they don't want to see it stopped as well. So we're really in this conundrum, both men and women. And I think that, you know, the other layer of all of this is just to recognize how much of our media, how much of our politics, academia, all of that is really controlled by this one very tight narrative, which is, of course, that, you know, in order for a woman to be successful and to be happy, she has to be willing to do it by herself and, you know, kind of elbow everybody out, even if that includes our own children. And, you know, of course, we're now seeing that there's the fruit of this is just horrific. And, you know, and I think if you told a young woman, you know, your dream, what will happen if you follow this feminist mantra, is you're going to end up being 65, 70, 80 years old, and you won't have any family, you won't have a husband, you won't have children, you might have had a great career, but you don't have anything else. And I think that that's really what ends up happening. You might have cats, actually, but it's just this isolation, that's what happens when you're living this feminist, this lifestyle. And so there's so many women out there that I think are really struggling from this, and even women that weren't or aren't feminists are struggling because it's just this destruction of both men and women. It's hard to find good husbands and people that have any appreciation for marriage and that real, those vows and that commitment that's involved. So, anyway, yeah, it's kind of, when you look at it in broad strokes, it's easy to see how this matriarchy, I call it, has really controlled the narrative. So people who have different voices, you know, whether it's someone like Marianne Glennon, who has just incredible credentials as a law professor at Harvard, she's ambassador to the Holy See, you know, she's just kind of swept under the carpet. Helen Albright, you know, there's so many different Catholic women who are just incredibly capable of, you know, talking about any topic, and yet they're not household names. That doesn't happen because They don't get invited to the right shows.
Right.
They don't get featured. They get maligned, you know, all of it. So it happens every day on a constant basis. I think we've just kind of gotten used to it. You know, we all know the pro-life march will not be covered by the mainstream media.
No.
Like, unless, of course, something, you know, if it's their narrative comes up, and then it's, you know, we are carpeted with how awful it is. But in any event, it's something that I think we've gotten really used to, and yet this is obviously not the way that it has to be, should be, or even should be. It's just recognizing that women have some very specific things that we are God-given desires that we are looking to fulfill, and feminism just can't fulfill them. And that's the second half of the book, is really talking about how following Our Lady's leadership and modeling is really, it leads to our authentic fulfillment instead of just this empty life of isolation.
Cary Gress is the author of The Anti-Mary Exposed, brand new book. We have autographed copies in our Founders Trade and Post store, mikechurch.com/shop. There's a limited number, so go grab you one this morning, and you can get a copy of the Marian option. And if you have children, the Marian option for children about the consecration through St. Louis de Montfort to Our Lady. Phyllis Schlafly is a name that I was thinking as you were talking.
Yeah. Talk about being maligned and not given a lot of credibility and whatnot. Yeah, Sarah Sanders. I mean, there's so many. They just open up this can of, you know, just maltreatment, and there's absolutely no respect unless you're really pro-abortion. And then, of course, you can do whatever you want. You can be whatever you want. So, yeah, it's incredibly tragic. I would like to say I'm pointing out the subtitle of this book, which is Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. Mallory Millett, whom I just mentioned, she's the one that actually came up with the title for her sister's book, Sexual Politics. And 50 years later, almost to the month, she came up with that word toxic femininity for me to put in my title of my book. So I think it's been an amazing thing to see this arc of her own life. And, you know, she's struggles and suffers so tremendously from what her sister has done to the culture, because, you know, all the women's studies programs are based on Kate's work. And I mean, she was just hugely influential. And so for her to be involved in this project and to be speaking about it in her own right has been really beautiful to see. The voice that she's been given.
Well, this is incredible. And I didn't even pick up on this until just now. Toxic femininity, as opposed to what we're told we're possessed with today. Toxic masculinity.
Exactly. Yep. So she definitely came up with that, and I think it suits it perfectly. And this is really just what women have done. Is just there's this odd balance of, you know, we want to be just like men and do everything that they can do and prove to them that we can do this, and at the same time that, you know, on the other side of their mouth they're saying, well, we hate you. You have to change. and of course that comes back to just this old idea of them trying to erase all kinds of any kind of gender differences, and they want to erase them entirely. A couple of years ago, Gloria Steinem had a new book out. I saw one of the interviews with her, and she was just basically boasting that she had become a genderless person. And, you know, that was the real goal of feminism at this point, was to erase all of that entirely.
The cover of the book is striking. And as soon as I saw it, you probably won't know this because you are a gal after all, and I am not. And I'm a comic book guy, and I assume you're not. As soon as I saw the cover, the first thing that came to my mind was, okay, that's a Frazetta. That's a Frank Frazetta. I don't know who painted that, but it looks like a Frazetta. And that's a compliment of the highest order. That's what sold bad books in the 70s, Frazetta covers. You pay Frank Frazetta 10 grand to paint a cover, and people just buy it to get the Frazetta art. That is striking with the, I'll give it to you in Latin, Caux Mariae, the heel of Mary on the snake with the apple still in its mouth.
Yeah, no, we have an incredible designer at TAN, Caroline Green, who did that, and she did the cover of Marian Option as well, and so, yeah, it turned out really, really well. We were so happy with it.
Okay, so let's go to the beginning here. Cary Gress, author of The Anti-Mary Exposed, and the subtitle, of course, is Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. You know, you're going to become public enemy number one if you hit the New York.
I know.
If you hit the NYT bestseller list with this, you're
No.
Your life as you knew it is over.
Yeah, no.
I know that wouldn't, of course, it would bother you, but you would, of course, have the divine protection of Our Lady. So I wouldn't worry about
it. Yeah. No, I'm not worried about it. It's one of those things, though, that, you know, culture obviously has gotten to the stage where they just stop at nothing. And so it's always remarkable. But at least, you know, you're making the right people mad. So
I like that.
Kind of a good thing, but in any event, and you know, it'll be interesting to see who touches it because of the fact that it does involve Mary. And so, anyway, yeah, it's going to be an interesting few months to see what happens. I did get the endorsement of Ann Coulter, which
really,
she's such a lightning rod, and yet she's got a very different audience, and she's Protestant. So, anyway, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with it.
You know what, though? She is someone that could be the subject of Rosaries for Conversion because...
Yep. No, we've been doing that, actually.
She's become quite an anti-war crusader, and she used to cheer on the military-industrial complex. Now she's haranguing Trump on Twitter and in her columns it appears to me that she has some of the signs that the bow may be ready to break, but we'll talk about that on another day. Antichrist and anti-Mary. So is anti-Mary, are we identifying a movement? Is that what you're doing? You're not identifying an individual.
Not an individual. Okay. I think we could all think of individuals.
Sure.
I'm not pinpointing one. Which is why I'm saying it's a movement, because it's really so widespread and affects so many different people. So, most of us, very unwittingly, because of the power of the matriarchy and their narrative and what they are controlling in Western society. So absolutely, it's a movement. St. John talks about the person of Antichrist. He talks about a spirit of the Antichrist. So this is definitely a spirit of the anti-Mary.
And what's I have the benefit of actually having read the previous book, The Marian Option, and the first chapter still sticks with me. Now, folks, I want you to, especially those of you that may not be Marian or have a devotion, and especially evangelicals and Protestants, one of the things that you learn in the first chapter of The Marian Option is, and Carrie goes through this very methodically, there is no human being save for our Lord himself who is more painted, who is more written about, who is more famous, who is more known in every country, anywhere in the world, it doesn't matter which one it is, than his mother. No one. And this is throughout all of history. You know, there are some Protestants and evangelicals who, for whatever reason, say, well, you know, that you guys just invented that in the 16th century as a pushback, and the apostles never regarded her. All not true. All not true. The Our Lady at Ephesus bilocating to St. James on the banks of that river, Our Lady of Pillar, just disproves that from the very beginning, from the get-go. But one of the things that I thought was very inspirational and still carries with me today is about this spirit of Our Lady, that she is everywhere. In every female instance where there's good, true, and beautiful, you will see the mother of the Redeemer. So what do we see in the mother of, or in the anti-Redeemer? What are we looking for?
Well, it's pretty easy to see. There's usually going to be at this... divide between mother and child. There's going to be a lot of rage. There's going to be a lot of anger. There's going to be a lot of self-assertion at the expense of others. You know, all the things that Mary's not. She's humble. She's meek. She's submissive. She's, you know, beautiful. She's good. All of these kinds of things are part of who she is. And the opposite, I think, we see in spades in the culture today. I think it's pretty... unfortunately, pretty easily identifiable. And actually, that's one of the things that's hard, is the fact that we don't have that many examples of Our Lady's virtues. So I know that for me, in particular, it was really challenging to sort of wrap my mind around who this woman was, because there were all these virtues that she had that I had never seen upheld or treated as real virtues. It always was kind of presented as, you know, submissive is a bad word.
Right, right.
Meekness is a doormat, and you know all of that. And of course, these are just not true. They can't be virtues if they're passive. You actively have to cultivate these things in your life. Otherwise, like I said, they're not virtues. But the human mind, of course, wants to swing from one extreme to the other, as Aristotle taught us so many centuries ago. And so we have this sense that if we're not sort of embracing this very hip, assertive, aggressive, really non-feminine in a traditional sense type of womanhood, then we must be a doormat. And I think that's really part of our struggle, is just understanding that we have a real model and trying to understand how we can mimic that when we really don't have living examples of it in the culture anymore.
Right.
That's a real challenge.
So now the book is divided into four parts. When I got the manuscript from you, one of the things, first thing I noticed, when I was going through it, and I was surprised by this, this idea of this book was hatched in August, right?
No, this has been in the works for a couple of years, actually. I have a part on the idea of anti-Mary in the Mary option. So it started. I got the idea when I was working on the Marian option, and then from there, just kind of exploded into something much bigger. So I've been working on it for a couple of years.
Okay, well, I think I interviewed you back in August or late summer, and you had just written something for the Catholic Herald, I want to say, or Register, for the Register, and you said, well, this is actually going to be one of the first chapters in a book that I'm working on. So that's why I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But the layout of the sections, and there are four, you know, beginning with part one, part two, part three, and part four. If we fast forward to part two, when we get to the part about the big lie, changing human mm-hmm. nature, this is what's going on with this transgender
mm-hmm.
obsession.
Right.
Right.
I wrote an article for Catholic World Report on this. And so, anyway, this ended up being a much bigger chapter based on that article. So that's what you and I talked about. But,
yes.
Yeah. I, in this chapter, I go back to Our Lady of Fatima's warning and her talk about the errors of Russia. And I think we always think of the errors of Russia more in economic terms, in terms of, communism. And yet in this chapter, I really kind of thread the argument through recognizing that at its very heart, what they were trying to do with communism was transform human nature, to try and say something that it is not. And you can certainly see this in the way that women were treated in Soviet Russia. Abortion was the one thing that everybody could get. It was in abundance. Vicky Thorne, the foundress of 40 Days, Project Rachel, says that she was in one of the satellite countries of Russia, and a woman told her that she'd had 80 abortions.
80?
So it was just 80 abortions. So Vicky actually was in such disbelief, she had to ask a doctor about it. Like, is this even possible? And he said, yep. And not as uncommon as you would think. So it was this idea of trying to, you know, transform men and women into these ideal workers and get them out of the family, have the children, you know, raised collectively, and destroy the family by destroying who women were and mothers, what motherhood was, and certainly what fatherhood was as well. So we can see that this same kind of transformation of the human person is alive and well in the feminist movement as well. I mean, even, you know, if you look at their theory, I mean, much of it just revolves around, of course, this idea that women are divine, that we're infallible, which is some of why we have so many problems with this, you know, believe the woman, because every woman is supposed to be right and you know, sort of untouchable. You can't argue against her. And also behind this idea, of course, is that there's this ideal of the woman and of, you know, our relationships with them, that the male-female relationship is actually not the primary one. But it's actually better to have a female-female relationship. So all of this goes into very quickly these horrifying ideas that were there from the very beginning and that we're seeing playing out in the culture, the wider culture today. And it's all, again, goes back to this idea that human nature can, in fact, be changed the family has to be destroyed and everything else is goes. So that's the heart of it.
But they made a business out of it. You call the section Anti-Mary Inc.
Right.
They made an industry out of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely they have. I mean, this is being driven by, you know, academic appointments and political appointments and the fashion industry, Hollywood, all of these places are benefiting tremendously from this. I mean, Planned Parenthood, look at how much money
they make. Good Lord.
It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, it's absolutely industry, and this is why they're so opposed to any outside voices. They're, you know, I think the Federalists, they talk about how women that don't agree with the matriarchy are called problematic women, because they end up threatening the whole enterprise, which is basically to say, you know, women don't want to be see their children as enemies. They want to see them as incredible gifts that they are and end up transforming them, because our children take our selfishness out of us and transform us into something much more beautiful than we can ever become without them. And they don't want any of that. They're really benefiting off of the brokenness that they and the carnage that they're leaving in the culture.
Carrie Gress is the author of The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. Brand new book, and you're hearing all about it here for the first time here on the Mike Church Show. And I want you to know that we have signed copies by Carrie in the Founders Trade and Post at mikechurch.com/shop. Supplies are limited, so go order you one or reserve a copy today. You know, I'm hearing you talk about this and having heard you talk about this for 3 years, I think your mother and your father might have missed a consonant in your name. Maybe instead of Carrie, it should have been Mary.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. Well, I have an older sister named Mary. So anyway, they couldn't name both of us Mary, I suppose. But
Is it occurred to you, or to your husband, or to your parents, that Our Lady has kind of chosen you for this very special task of defending and promoting Marian culture? I mean, to me, from the outside looking in, it's like, well, my go-to girl on Our Lady is Carrie Gress.
Well, thank you. No, I think, you know, the one thing that is just fascinates me is I just kept coming back to this idea that our dignity as women comes certainly from Christ and the gospel, but it really had this full flourishing because of her. And that's really the irony, is that, you know, all these women are railing against Marian virtues, and yet that's where dignity came from historically. It was from her. It didn't come from other religions. It's just not, you know, this idea of equal human rights is certainly not something you're going to find in other societies and cultures. And so the foundations for that come back to her. And yet just this disconnect between who she is and who women are supposed to be in our culture. And that's really where my struggle has been, is how do we bring those back together again? Because the church is actually the most natural place for a woman, in terms of, you know, women want to be beautiful, they want to be loved, and they want to do good. It's funny, I was just in Philadelphia with my family, and we were at a hotel, and my daughters, one of them got sick, so she and I spent a lot of time watching the Hallmark Channel. And I was amazed at this formula. I've never watched it before, but this formula that they have, where it's the woman falls in love, and she does something like save the library, or she's helping out some orphanage, or, you know, she's doing some sort of good work simultaneously. And I thought, and she's beautiful, of course, while she's doing all of it. So this is the formula I think women want. And you can actually see this in a broken format with the female narrative. All these women don't think that they're doing something bad by promoting abortion. They think they're doing something good, but that's partially because we haven't given them the tools to see that how distorted that is and why this is all pagan and is going to lead to their own destruction. So in any event, I think that as a Catholic woman, I recognize that the church can give me all of these tools that I need to actually feel fulfilled. I know I'm loved by God the Father. And now, of course, in my vocation, I'm loved by my husband. I know that how to do good, even if I were not doing any of this, I would still be doing good in my own vocation. And also even just praying for others. So, and then, of course, you know, I think the less vain a woman is, the more beautiful she becomes. You know, we see this with Mother Teresa. She's not an attractive woman, and yet everybody says she was so beautiful. So it's that, you know, that balance in the church of, or that you can get what you want when you're not really trying to get it, I guess, kind of idea, when you're not so focused on it, that issue. So anyway, so for me to see that women should be flocking to the church because of the fact that she meets all of these needs. Women aren't doing that. I think that's really where my big question comes in and what I would love to see more of and to be able to give to women as well.
I actually told a feminist in a news department one day about 6 years ago when she was haranguing me about my patriarchy, and then I mentioned something about about Catholicism, and she's like, well, your church is run by men and this and that and the other. And mm-hmm. I said, Susan, really, you really need to leave these liberal enclaves, and you really need to actually know what you're talking about. There is no church on earth, there's no organized religion on earth that has ever exalted and held in the highest esteem women. Her name's Mary. She's a mother. There are millions of statues of her all around the world, and in every Catholic church I've ever been in, there is a stunning representation of the mother of the Redeemer. If you woke up this morning and tried to be wrong, you couldn't be more wrong than you are. So I think that's an example. She's worked in the news business her whole life and in academia. This is what he's taught.
Right. Yeah, and she has never heard another voice or seen other examples. And if she has seen examples of it, she's probably scoffed at it and thought, oh, that woman is a doormat and, is not worth paying any attention to. You know, thank goodness I'm not her, kind of thing.
Thank goodness I'm not her. Well, you would want to be the Mary, not the anti-Mary. Carrie Gress, the author of the Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity, is on the Doomaker Hotline with us. Okay, we'll wrap this up and just briefly talk, because I want people to get the book and I want them to read it. The last two parts, part three is Mary the Antidote, and part four is Modern Women and Mary. I think this is one of the things that is probably the biggest bridge to cross, and it's because of the programming. Now, you can call it brainwashing or programming. And that is that the example that our Blessed Mother gives, and the fact that she's a virgin, it's just it is counter to everything when you think female, especially popular female in any part of Western civilization today. You just don't think. I'll give you an example. And I got so much flack for this back when I was on Sirius XM. I made the comparison after the Super Bowl, Stupid Bowl, after Katy Perry did her slut dance and did all that stuff that she did. I said, okay, Dad, who would you want to have as a daughter? And I had on one side, I had a painting of St. Catherine of Siena, and on the other side was Katy Perry doing the whatever it was that she was doing at the Super Bowl. And of course, you know what I got? You're comparing apples to oranges. You can't go back to having this and that. You can't go back to women wearing veils. Church I go to, I see women in veils every Sunday. I don't know what you're talking about. But you can see this, actually, in popular culture, the anti-Mary, what you're not supposed to do. The examples are so rare. They're so rare of what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Talk about that.
No, true. And that's really, again, the control of this matriarchy that we've just gotten used to. But I think it's incredibly challenging, really, for women to sort of think, well, why would I even change? And yet the reason why I think women are kind of opening up to this and would be open to seeing it is because they're miserable. Feminism keeps telling us that we need more feminism to be happy. And so this women keep sort of striving for this. And that they can't figure out why their relationships aren't working, why they can't hang on to the men that they love, and all of this. And even while they're alienating people at work, there's this great example. My brother used to forecast avalanches in Sun Valley, Idaho, and I went one winter and spent some time with him and heard him talk about how most people die from avalanches because their breath creates ice around their mouth, which they can't breathe. So if the ice were created, they would from the heat, they probably would still be able to breathe. Well, I think this is the same thing that women do, is they're filled with rage. They're told that they need to act in a certain way, and they're just cutting themselves off from authentic relationships and not recognizing these things are alienating us. So you know, and I hear what Catholic women talking about this too. Like, it's much harder to be a woman now than ever. You know, they still see these challenges when I don't think it's coming from men. I think it's coming from the fact that they don't know that their lives would change significantly if they appreciated kindness, if understanding, compassion, all of these things that come very naturally to women that I think we've almost had to sort of, again, think of rewiring ourselves to sort of fit in with the mainstream culture, not to mention all the sensual aspects of it that we're told are vitally important. But again, all these things point to this real desire in the feminine heart, which is to be loved, to do good, and to be beautiful. And so if we can address those things like Our Lady does in the proper ordered sense, then I think we can gain something of a foothold for women to see that, you know, you've been trying this for 40, 50, 60 years, and you're still not happy. Maybe you should try something else. And that's something else we've got a great example of it. And, you know, the best thing is that when women dive into trying to understand who Our Lady is, it's not just some intellectual effort, but in fact, she's a spiritual mother to all of us. So as a result, she will help us and she wants to guide us and she wants to give us that joy and peace and happiness that she knows, you know, all of us desire so much. So I think that's the other nice thing is it's not just this intellectual gymnastics that we have to get to kind of understand who she is, but it's a matter of creating a relationship with her and allowing her to kind of bring us to those great fruits.
Well, just one quick back to St. Catherine of Siena and the comparison to Katy Perry and the graphics up in the in the chat room at mikechurch.com/chat. You can see my my artwork from it. At the time of her popularity, she wasn't Saint Catherine. She was just Catherine. She wasn't even first order. She was third.
Right.
She was third order. She was laity.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Just flesh this out for a second. This is a woman that came from a small town, Siena, Italy, that was so strikingly beautiful. Every man in Italy wanted to marry her, and she would have none of it. She didn't want to do it. She struggled with those issues, but ultimately she became third order. She was very very whip smart, very 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 very, very smart, and she was inspired by conversations that she would have with Our Lady, and she was telling. I mean, this is now if you want to tell me that. The Catholicism in the Catholic Church is not the faith. Consider this. At this time, this woman, again, she never took a religious order. She didn't take any vows that I know of other than her third order vows, which aren't insignificant. She was talking to the, quote, Pope of Avignon. She was talking, writing letters to the, quote, anti-pope. And she was talking to the actual pope. And at the end of all this, it was Catherine of Siena's writings, her prayer, her devotion, her love, her acting like mother, she acting like Our Lady to keep the apostles together, you might imagine, after our Lord left, that ultimately prevailed and the Pope returned to Rome. That's the story.
Well, and you can see that over and over among the saints. And I think the real key is that women need to understand they're going to be tremendously happy and fruitful and beautiful when they are doing God's will. And you can see this, you know, with everyone from Joan of Arc to Saint Monica,
right?
To all these religious nuns. When a woman aligns her will with God, and she becomes subsumed into who He is, that's when there's fruit. That's when amazing, remarkable things happen. And we seem to think that it's, you know, these achievements of so-called, you know, women politicians. You can think of like five off the top of your head. That what they're doing is somehow great. Well, these things are nothing compared to what these amazing saints have done in terms of the culture. And, you know, St. Catherine is the perfect example of that, just to show that contrast of, you know, what we can do on our own is so minuscule and actually is usually a distortion and leads to bad things than what we can do when our will is united with God. And then, you know, again, we have to die to ourselves, and that's where the fruit is. And that's the hard message that I think people just aren't comfortable with, but that's if they want to be happy, like there's the formula.
And of course in Modern Women and Mary, there's Imitating Mary, Six Ways to Combat the Anti-Mary, and then Helping the Walking Wounded. There are a lot of walking wounded out there. They may not even be walking. They may be limping or in wheelchair wounded by now.
Yeah.
that need this assistance. Okay, the book is the Anti-Mary Exposed, and it's all about, as we just talked about, rescuing the culture from toxic femininity. I look forward to getting my copy. Even though I have the manuscript.
Getting mine. Yes. No, they're just done. Any minute they should be arriving.
Oh, they shipped on Monday. Yeah. They shipped on Monday to you.
They shipped on Monday. Yep.
Yes, they shipped on Monday. So Tan was just a little anxious to get it out. And anyways.
Yeah, they're not coming out till it's not out at Amazon or elsewhere until March 1st. I think they're not releasing them. So anyway, you might be the first place where people can get them. So
oh, we have the pre release.
Exactly.
I'm going to keep you busy.
Good. That is great. So, and I think given all the things we're seeing with abortion and, all of these issues that are coming up, just daily I look at the news and I'm like, yep, that's an anti-Mary issue. That's an anti-Mary issue. Like, it's just strewn across the pages, just these real struggles that we are having all kind of have this similar root of we've destroyed the soil of our culture and we got to reclaim it.
And she predicted it. I keep when I tell my humorous stories about Our Lady, I go to these events where they let me ramble on, and I always have three rosaries on me in case one of them breaks or I want to get one away. And I always brandish the weapon.
They don't work when they break. Is that right?
I don't know if they. I haven't broken one yet, but I've seen people break them.
Of course, they still work. Anyway.
They still work. You just got to gather the beads up. But I always brandish the rosary like I do for the YouTube right now, and I always say, "I know a gal. You can accomplish anything that you think needs to be done, if it's good, true, and beautiful. I know a gal." And you can always call on her. And I can go through the times in my life where, you know, I've told the story that my mother left and is still removed from the Catholic Church shortly after my sister, my baby sister's baptism. And yet, for all of those years that I was raised at best as an evangelical for a little while, never as a Catholic child, I can look back at my life and go, she never left me. She always wanted me to be consecrated to her. She always wanted me. Mm-hmm. She made me fall in love. I lived in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Why should I be a Notre Dame football fan? Notre Dame, Our Lady. Mm-hmm. Why, and all of these things in our lives. And folks, I'm telling you, it carries on to something with this continuing this work here. The Marian option is a true option. And it doesn't mean that you don't go to Jesus. For Protestants and evangelicals and those of no faith that may think, what, you just throw Jesus on the side? Any Marian consecration is a consecration to Jesus through Our Lady. St. Louis de Montfort's is specific in this, and it is that you can ask the mother to do. You know, there's a famous story. So get the pen and paper ready, right?
I got it.
You probably know the story, and I don't know the name, but there is an Old Testament story, and I want to say it's in Isaiah. Maybe it's in Judith. I don't remember. I should have written it down. See, somebody went to the king, and this guy went to the king, and he asked him for something, and he really needed it, and the king told him, "I'm busy. Go away." No, and he was desperate. And in his desperation, he asked God, "God, what am I to do?" And God said, "Go ask the queen." And so he went, and he somehow got an audience with the queen. And, "My lady, you know, I need this. My kingdom is." Oh, gosh, I wish I could remember what this was. And the queen, Our Lady Mary, felt sorry for him and said, "I will take your case to my son." And she did, and the son relented and granted the request. Now, he actually attempted to go to the king, and the king said no. Our Lord is known. There's story after story that the St. Alphonsus Liguori Institute puts this wonderful magazine out. I've tried to order 100 copies. I've mailed them. I don't know if the letter ever got there. I sent him a blank check. Send me 100 of these. You're one of the people I had in mind, but it's a book that St. Alphonsus wrote called Salve Regina. And in the book, at the end of every chapter, there's an example of a story. And there is story after story after story in this thing. It's like 30 chapters long. story after story after story of people either being saved directly because she rescued mm-hmm. them, or there was one instance where there was this just vagabond sinner, and he was on his deathbed, and he was trying to confess, and our Lord was telling him, no, I'm not going to forgive him. And so then he prayed. I can't remember how he found this out. He asked Our Lady, and Our Lady went to him. And first Our Lord said, no, I deny your request. But she didn't. She's the mediatrix of all graces, and, you know, the memorare prayer is true. She won't take no for an answer, so she kept badgering him. And finally he went, oh, okay, Ma. Okay, Mother, yes, he can go to purgatory. This is throughout the entire history of the church, Carrie. And just because they didn't have writing implements, not everyone wrote prior to the Gutenberg press, okay? This is another part of the fallacy here. Does not mean that there aren't traditions that that tell these stories. And there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of them. It's inspirational, always inspirational to me to read stories of the intercession of the Blessed Mother. And I fancy myself a cigar smoking, scotch and whiskey, bourbon slamming guy. I could do some of the rough and tumble. Maybe she softens me. Maybe she softens all of us. But
I think that's what she does for all of us, which is why her popularity soared so much. I think absolutely. Yeah, and that's how she transforms culture, is by shaving off those rough edges, that's for sure.
Well, it's a pleasure and a joy always. You're going to be very successful with this book. I know you are. So,
thank you. Thank you so much for chatting with me about it today. It was fun.
You don't need my assistance, but I'll give it to you anyways. Because you have her assistance. But I think that this is going to and I think this is needed right now. I think that there needs to be. Our Lady of Akita said, and Our Lady of Quito said, bishop will confront bishop. Priest is going to confront priest. Well, I think right now, woman is going to, Marian woman is going to confront anti-Marian woman. Mm-hmm. And man is going to confront man. We're in a war. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, you began chapter one with a quote from before he was Pope, Archbishop Wojtyla. And saying that you people don't realize this is the worst of the worst. It's never been like this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where
mm-hmm.
your book starts, chapter one, page one.
Yeah.
Folks, gird your loins and read good. Read the good, the true, and the beautiful, like the anti-Mary exposed again. We have it before anyone else at mikechurch.com/shop.
It's headed into its second printing already, so we're pretty excited about that.
So there you go.
Great.
All
advance.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to watch this one.
We're all over it. Give our best and our prayers to your husband and your family.
Thank you, and definitely keep us in your prayers.
You better believe it.
Appreciate it.
Every single day. Oh, okay, everybody. She is Carrie Gress, and as always, gracious with her time. Thank you. We shall continue our prayers for you. And
thank you.
God bless you.